Bucks fans, how are you? Welcome to the Monday Morning Joe podcast, special Tuesday edition, which means I am recording it on a Tuesday, so that's what that means. I'm Steve Isbitz of joebucksfan.com and one of the Joes writing at the website. Thank you for all your support. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving weekend. It never lasts long enough, does it? And of course, we retreated to this incredible Bucks victory that I call it incredible because it's such a rare, weird, and bizarre feeling. I really didn't know how to handle it. I really did not know how to handle watching my football team play a complete game, all three phases, and actually win handily and smoothly. When's the last time we were able to deal with that? What, against the Bears last opening day? I'm just guessing here, but it's been so long. Which, you know, you realize that you're so disconnected from good football at home, dominating at home, that it's a good feeling. I'm glad to re-experience that with all of you. The podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, our great friends there, just north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, right on the right. There's Bill Curry Ford, 58 years a Tampa tradition, home of the nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles. All the details are at BillCurryFord.com. And, of course, we're also presented by Discount Garage Doors. No joke, great deals on garage doors. Free service call, free diagnosis. They'll come to your home, fix your garage door, any kind of repair. Usually they can do it right away if you need it. If you want to keep shopping around, no problem, no cost. Give them a call today, 866-420-DOOR. Or the website with great coupons is dgdoors.com. A lot of great education there as well. They have a wonderful selection. And tell them you heard about it on joebucksfan.com. That'll get you 10% off. We'll talk a little bit about those guys later. Now, what really stood out in this game? You know, I really wasn't joking around saying that I didn't know how to handle it. It's just been so rare. Jameis Winston himself broke a 7-game streak of having a turnover or some sort of fumble, turnover, pick, whatever, in 7 consecutive games. He broke that streak, and in that stretch, he had 14 turnovers by interceptions, and I think it was 4 by fumbles, and of course, additional fumbles that weren't turnovers, but it was a long, long, long time coming. Now, I'm going to go right to Jameis, even though there's a lot to get to. I'm going to go right to Jameis because after the game, you know, we had said here on the podcast and on Ira Kaufman's podcast, it was a very different Jameis last week in the sense that he just was more subdued and just didn't seem like his usual high energy self. Ira labeled him low wattage. And here comes Jameis. He has this game. And after the game, very subdued in the locker room, very subdued at his news conference, very subdued with his chat on Sirius XM radio after the game. And if you go to YouTube, look up Buccaneers, you will see on their page, you'll see a video of JPP, Jason Pierre-Paul, giving his little post-game speech. And it's hard to understand. They bleep out some bad words, and JPP is not the easiest guy to understand when he's all fired up. But the team is huddled up, and JPP gives this post-game speech. And then they're like ready to, you know, go 1, 2, 3, family, and chant, or Bucks, or whatever. And he turns to Jameis and sort of says, like, you wanted to say something? And Jameis, in a very subdued tone, as opposed to his usual classic screaming of one team, one heartbeat, he says it very softly and gently, and his face looks like a guy who just doesn't want to be an animated person anymore. And it's interesting because he's transforming. I don't know if it's intentional. I don't know if Jameis is just having maybe in a mature maturation process where he's thinking about the person he wants to convey, or is he sort of plotting to, he wants to look in a certain way for Bucks ownership going forward or other teams, or he's just, I don't know. He just seems different in the way he's carrying himself, and it's evident in that video. You don't have to rely on me talking about one news conference versus another or what he looks like in the locker room, etc. I had talked to him myself, after the Giants game, he seems like a different cat right now. And you know what? I don't have any answers. I'm just monitoring the situation, but it's pretty striking. And even after that game, Jenna Lane of ESPN was asking him some questions in his news conference, and Jameis admitted to sort of wanting to match Fitzpatrick and putting that pressure on himself to sort of, you know, come in and be like Fitz with his great early production. And that was very telling. Now, Dirk Koetter didn't like that. Yesterday at his news conference, he sort of blasted back at Jenna Lane, saying she asked him about Jameis's response, and Koetter said, "You led him to it," meaning he thought she put that answer in his mouth, to which, of course, I say that's ludicrous. Jameis is a grown-up. He's done probably how many news conferences in his life? 200, maybe? He knows what he's saying. He knows how to measure his words. He's not said plenty of things that he might have wanted to say, and probably said some things he didn't want to say as well. So Jameis knows what's coming out of his mouth, and it seemed like a candid moment where he just was sort of saying, yeah, maybe I was really out of a mindset of just playing one game at a time, one play at a time, excuse me. And that's okay. That's okay. I don't know why Koetter feels a need to defend that, but you know what? That can go to coaching. If your star quarterback, your starting quarterback's mindset is a little off, well, if I were the coach, and my dad was a coach for a lot of different sports, I've coached myself, not anywhere near the level my father did or nearly as much. But, hey, if your players don't have the right mentality, that's on the coach. If their thinking process is a little bit off, you know, the coach has to take some responsibility for that, and maybe Koetter didn't want to. I don't know. It was an interesting moment. You can go back. Also, if you're at the Buccaneers YouTube page, you can watch Koetter comment about Jenna Lane, write to her, say you led him to it, and he didn't like that response from I don't know if he didn't like it from Jameis, but something rankled Koetter on that thing. And you can also look at that post-game video. We didn't put it on Joe Bucks Fan yet, but that's fine. We'll get to that. I didn't put it up yet. I want to see how Jameis is this Wednesday to see if he's any different, or maybe even asked him about how subdued he's sort of appeared over the last week. Now, we learned, and it's possible by the time you hear this, DeSean Jackson will already be on injured reserve for his messed up thumb, which he's been playing through, apparently, and he was scheduled to see a specialist in New York about it. Dirk Koetter revealed yesterday after seeing the local hand guy, as Koetter called the doctor. Now, I wrote on Joe Bucks Fan, and I think this is the perfect out for the Bucks in so many ways. It's time to just stash DeSean Jackson on injured reserve, because that's what general managers do at the end of the year. Guys, teams, when they're not fighting for a playoff spot, they take a guy who has a little bit of an injury and they stash him on injured reserve for the final 3 weeks. And that allows them a roster spot to bring up a practice squad guy, or somebody on the street even, but take a practice squad guy, move him up to the roster, so when the season ends, that means that guy has a contract to stay with the team into next year. So guys who are on the practice squad when the season ends, those guys are immediately free agents when a season ends. But if you're on the roster, you carry over with what's called an off-season contract, and if you make the team, sure, then you're going to get paid your real full money. So not that the Bucks practice squad is so littered with incredible players, the Bucks have to do this, but it's standard protocol in the NFL, and Jackson, with 5 games to go, if he's got a thumb injury, and the Bucks are not going to have any problem putting him on the practice squad, even if it's considered a one-month injury. It's not going to be a problem or scrutinized where they're going to get in trouble. It's just the way it's done. And Jackson, the guy, is not fully on board with the Bucks. I'm not an anti-Jackson like a lot of people are. I'm really not. But I've talked about it here. I think the biggest thing goes back to he didn't want to return punts, and he's able to return punts. And Dirk Koetter said he has the green light. So aside from that being ridiculous that Dirk Cutter doesn't put his best punt returner in and say you got to return punts, at least at select times. Jackson himself doesn't want to be out there. And he asked for a trade. And he's due $10 million next year. So the odds of him coming back to the Bucs are basically zero, unless there's a brand new head coach who really wants him and feels the need to invest that resource, $10 million, into a number two receiver, which really doesn't happen around the league. Now, I believe that Jackson can be part of a good team. The Bucs don't know how to deal with him. And some of that's Jackson's fault, but some of that's just the Bucs. I mean, not every great team has everybody on the same page all the time, and Jackson certainly has the ability to make the team better. I'm not lobbying for the guy. I'm just saying throw him on injured reserve, end this stuff that's going on with him and Jameis, because if Jameis is the quarterback and they don't have chemistry after 2 years, you have to accept that reality. It doesn't really even matter where the blame is. That's the reality. And if Jameis isn't going anywhere, then you got to get rid of the guy who he doesn't have chemistry with, even if it's Jameis's fault. Even if all the chemistry issues with Jackson are Jameis's fault, Jameis has to win in that scenario because the quarterback is the quarterback and the offense still works without DeSean Jackson. And Jameis doesn't have these issues with other guys. So I certainly hope D-Jack ends up on injured reserve, and this is the end of the D-Jack situation. It didn't work. Turned out to probably be a bad free agent signing in a lot of ways. You know, all the truth of what's been going on behind the scenes, maybe it'll come out, maybe it won't. But Jackson crying on social media after the game, bonding with a guy who says he's a Falcons fan, saying, hey, D-Jack, you're not used right with the Bucs. You know, come on, man. It's all weak stuff. It shows he's not a team guy. And look, he asked to be traded. You know, if he goes on IR, I don't think Jason Light's going to be able to trade him after the season. Maybe for anything more than a sixth-round pick, seventh-round pick for a team that might want DeSean Jackson for a year and see what happens. But it's possible. Anyway, I hope this is the end for Jackson. It'll be a chapter that we won't remember that fondly, but he did put up some exciting moments this season. And on to Chris Godwin, who clearly can handle what's coming at him. I believe he's caught every ball targeted to him over the last 2 weeks. So, you know, he certainly looks like a number two receiver in the NFL. He certainly looks like he could be a number one. They're set at the position. If they re-sign Adam Humphries, who'll be a free agent who probably wants to stay here, then they're in great, great shape. Justin Watson, the organization at least, believes in him. I'm not sure the regime will still be here, but if you go into your season with three good receivers, you can still get help out there, and certainly the Bucs round that out with excellent tight ends. They're fine. They're absolutely fine without DeSean Jackson. Mission accomplished as far as moving on and using the resources elsewhere as I see it. Now, I definitely want to talk about the reality in the Bucs situation here as it relates to a new coach, and clear up some of the confusion with Ronald Jones and get into some Vita Vea, because there's some important elements there that I think weren't necessarily visible to everyone at all. Do want to again thank Bill Curry Ford, general manager Sean Sullivan. He's a friend of mine, great Bucks fan. He is the boss there. And if you go to Bill Curry Ford and tell him you like Joe Bucks fan, you're a Bucks fan, whatever, aside from talking Bucks with you, he will give you $500 off any price on the website that you see at BillCurryFord.com. It's really that simple. They have transparent pricing. And let's say you see a pre-owned truck that has a nationwide lifetime warranty on it, and you like it, and it's $23,000, whatever it might be. I'm picking a round number. Sean's going to give you $500 off. Great opportunity, great people, great quality. Bill Curry Ford. BillCurryFord.com is the website. And remember, right on JoeBucksFan.com, you can always find a link there. If you're reading a story, you can click on that lifetime warranty banner from Bill Curry Ford. And all the details of the warranty are really on the website as well. You just have to click on them, and you can read the fine print if you want. 10 years roadside assistance, 1 year maintenance. Bill Curry Ford is the place to go. Now, I wanted to say in the locker room after the game, a lot of emotion in that locker room, a lot of mixed emotion, a lot of relief, but a lot of passion. I was really pleased. I was pleased to see how much that meant to a lot of players, especially Gerald McCoy, Jason Pierre-Paul. The defensive line, I think, was really feeling it because they knew that they were driving the bus on that day. And let's face it, two things. One, the Niners offensive line is the strength of that team. So that made it more impressive. Two, the Bucs, the strength of their team was supposed to be the defensive line. And this was the game where we really first saw that in a complete way. And keep in mind, the Niners, I don't have it in front of me, but I know I read it multiple times. Their new quarterback, Nick Mullins, he wasn't sacked in his first couple of games. So the Bucs got to him four times. They had their issues against the run, but they they weren't horrible. Certainly San Francisco didn't dominate in the run game, and the Bucs made their share of stops, and the pressure was consistent for a change. I'm always less concerned about the sack total than the consistency of the pressure, and it was there. You go back and watch the first half of that game. Man, Nassib is the guy's battling. He's fighting. He forced a fumble that was just all effort to extend his arm while he was being blocked to kind of swat it away. And these were these sacks really weren't because Nick Mullins was holding the ball too long. It was because the rush was real and good for the Bucs. You know, they're now middle of the pack in the NFL in total sacks. I think they're like 14th, and you know, maybe it'll get better. We'll see. But Vita Vea broke through. He had that breakthrough game, and he had to have it. And I asked Gerald McCoy about it, who explained that Brenton Buckner was on him endlessly, relelessly, and that the other guys were as well, just all over Vea, and that's how you have to help develop a guy. You got to be all over him. And I think that's what led to Vea, and it is Vea. I keep saying it both ways. Vea, in the locker room after the game, was talking and talking and talking some more, and he was talking to media, and then he was talking again, talking to everybody, and eager to chat, and that's not his personality. So that really, to me, told me how much pressure he was feeling because he hadn't broken through, because he had flat out looked pretty bad, and how he had earned that Velcro name. And maybe, just maybe, Vea can build on this. Maybe that was his breakthrough to realize, I can do this, and I'm playing a little bit harder. And the fact that he was so celebratory and out of his apparent normal personality, just talking it up and with media is what I'm saying, in many different ways and many different times, there might be something more there that meets the eye. And also with Vea, Dirk Koetter, who of course, you know, at JoeBucksFan.com, we've studied every word the guy has said since he took over as offensive coordinator in 2015. So when you study somebody, you sort of, you know, like anybody in your family, you get a sense of when they're joking, when they're serious, when they're mad, when they're pissed, when they're phony, all that kind of stuff. Well, Koetter mentioned after the game that Jason Light, the GM, had a sit down with Vea, and maybe that snapped him out of it. And Koetter joked that he had a long list of guys for Jason Light to sit down with. And he moved on. He didn't really talk much about Vea. Well, knowing Koetter, I am 100% confident that that was real, that Koetter really was being straight when he said Jason Light sat down with him and had a chat. And my gut tells me, and I'll find out this week, my gut tells me that Light did sit down with Vea and say, look, man, you are better than this. And here's some film of the good and the bad, and you need to get back to this. And whatever it was that Light did, which I believe happened, got through. And that's good. That's good. But it'll be very interesting to see if that, what we can get out of the Bucs and Vea himself about that comment about sitting down with Jason Light, because I guarantee you it happened, and maybe it did make an impact. Maybe Light was able to inspire him. I don't know. But it's fun to think about the little things, right? Vea breaking through certainly makes Jason Light look a lot better, his draft, because Vea, in the minds of many Bucs fans, the more emotional ones, the ones that aren't as fiery, excuse me, the ones that are more volatile, they went from a bust to, hey, this guy can play in one game. And that's not fair, but that's the reality. And if he can build on this, if he can do this going forward, maybe it makes its draft look a lot better. If this defense can start to win a lot more battles on the defensive line and get better late, the Bucs are going to win some games. And they're playing for jobs right now. I still don't think for a second that Dirk Cutter is going to be back here next year. But the complexion of the team can change a lot based on how it finishes. And it will also, how they finish, I think very much could keep Jason Light in play as general manager and also affect the type of coach Team Glazer looks for when they're making a final decision on a head coach. So there's a lot at stake here, even though I think it's curtains for Dirk Cutter. I think there's a lot of other things still in the balance here. Do I think the Bucks can run the table here and win five and get to the playoffs, which nine is probably going to be good enough this year in the NFC? No, I don't think that at all. I hate to burst your bubble, and it's fun to think about. It really is. I know I find myself thinking about, well, they're getting Carolina at just the right time, and, you know, sweeping in the division is difficult and blah, blah, blah. No, I don't think the Bucks have the defensive horses to deal with Carolina's offense. And sure, the Bucks can outscore anybody. They could beat, it wouldn't shock me at all if they beat New Orleans. It would not surprise me one bit. It wouldn't shock me if they beat anybody left on their schedule, but the consistency in the defense, the talent isn't going to allow them to be consistent. So it's just, maybe they're a 6-win team. Maybe they're a 7-win team. We'll see. If Jameis keeps playing turnover-free football, they'll probably find a way to win 7 games, outscoring their opponents, which is fine. I don't think it's going to save Cutter at all, but it could make Todd Monken an interesting character in the Bucs' future at head coach. I don't know what the Glazers think of Monken. I don't know. None of us know. If the Bucs somehow want to keep this offense intact, maybe they throw it at Monken. Maybe they make him a unique deal. Maybe they try to do it that way. I don't know. Nothing would surprise me with the Glazers, but you do have the number one ranked offense, and if it gets better with Jameis as the season closes, and they end up number one, and they go from ninth in scoring to fifth in scoring, and that's how they close out, that's tough for ownership to just blow up and hand over to a new guy. It's a difficult situation for them, I promise you. They'd be thinking twice and three times about that. And maybe Monken pairs up with a defensive coordinator of their choice, a guy who they think could be head coach. Who knows? I don't know. But it's interesting to think about here as we head toward December. And December means the holidays and a lot of people over to your house and wanting to keep animals out of your house and all that kind of stuff. Hey, it doesn't matter what month it is. If your garage door is not working or it's broken or it's open or it's stuck or whatever it is, you need to get it fixed. You're going to get it fixed anyway at some point. You might as well do it now at a great price with a great local company, not a big national company, a local company serving 18 counties across Florida. That's Discount Garage Doors. Their website, dgdoors.com. Remember, it's a free diagnosis. They'll come out to your house, tell you what you need, write it up for you, show you their great selection of new doors. Very inexpensive. Very inexpensive. And of course, or just make the repair. Change out whatever you need and get that door safe and hurricane ready or just working again. And of course, you all know it. If you hit that button and your garage door doesn't go up and you got to get to work because the car's in the garage, you know what that crisis is. That's why Discount Garage Doors is there for you all the time. 866-420-DOOR. Hit their website, dgdoors.com. Wanted to throw out a couple of things. I was shocked at how well the Bucs linebackers played against the 49ers. It certainly wasn't perfect, but I thought Riley Bulla, you know, as Dirk Cutter said on his radio show, he kind of said something like last week, Riley's in the right position. He's where he's supposed to be. He's just kind of, it was as if Cutter was saying, look, he doesn't have the talent to do what he needs to do. But Bulla made some plays in that game, some hidden plays. And I guess it's reasonable to think as he gets more playing time and Devontae Bond gets more playing time, maybe they can rise from the JV ranks, as I called it, to low-level varsity. Maybe they can get a little better and help this team get back to an almost reasonable defense. I don't know. It's worth being optimistic. I thought he played pretty well as that goes. On Ronald Jones, Cutter made it very clear on his radio show that Jones is healthy and ready to play. He said that on Friday night, but he was not active. Meanwhile, Sean Wilson is not even on the roster because he's hurt, and Ronald Jones is not playing, and he's healthy. No hamstring. According to the coach, he's ready to go, and he was full participation in practice last week. It's really damning, really damning. It's just a big black mark for Jason Light. No other way to say it. The guy seems to be a bust, and because you know the Bucks coaches would put him in there if they thought he was ready, and I guess he's not. So, not good. Speaking of not good, Caleb Benenach, right guard. You know, I watch the guy, watch him on film every single darn week. He does good things, but so much bad, too much bad. First half against the Niners, he's getting turned around. He's getting blown up in the run game multiple times. Dangerous again in the passing game. He's going to get somebody killed. I really, really hope Alex Kappa gets his shot. You got to see what these guys have. We already see 11 weeks of Benenach. 11 weeks. He's young. He has experience in the league. Yes, he's a third-year guy, but hasn't played a lot of guard. But it's been enough already. I don't think he's getting better. I really don't. Anthony Becht, who played years in the league, Bucks, Jets, Rams, other team, Chiefs. Becht called him more of a finesse player on the radio the other day. A finesse player at guard? Come on, man. Get him out of here. And this is Jason Light, who was all over getting nasty at guard, right? That's why he wanted J.R. Sweezy. That's why he drafted Kappa, who had that reputation. And Becht has been watching Benenach and says he's more of a finesse player. Come on. He stinks. Caleb, I can't block. And I really hope the Bucks make the change. Show some accountability, Dirk Cutter. Somebody's got to... I can't imagine Benenach's getting better than a C grade every week, and I'm being generous. Have some accountability. Give the young guy a shot. Kappa wasn't perfect. He got beaten. But, you know, I think it's worth the time. Let him play. Let him play. Get Benenach out there. Maybe you can light a fire on him. He clearly has some of the talent. He just doesn't have the same drive. If you watch it closely, you see him getting into a couple of loafs on broken plays. Donovan Smith has one really bad loaf on a broken play. He's just watching Jameis run right by him. Yeah, that's not the way you draw it up, Donovan. When your block is off you or whatever and there's no whistle and your quarterback is running right past you and you're looking right at him standing still like you're online at Publix, come on, man. You just can't do that. And I know Pro Football Focus gave Donovan Smith tremendous grades, best in the league for pass blocking this past week. And I know that he has pass blocked well the last couple of weeks. He's got all the talent in the world, and he's going to get paid next year. It's just the Bucks have to decide the value. And are they worried that some of that lack of effort that occasionally Smith will show in each game, is that something that could escalate after he gets paid? I don't know. I'm not paid to make those big, bold decisions. And obviously, with the number one ranked passing offense, Donovan Smith doesn't suck. So get that out of your head and throw it away because it's just not accurate. But I get the frustration, especially for those who study the Bucks and want to see a tough guy line. I don't know where that comes from outside of Jensen, but let's see some more Kappa. I would love to see that. We're going to, on JoeBucksFan.com, continue to put more effort as we hit December into the coaching candidates because Dirk Cutter's survival shot here is probably 1%, which is probably his chance of going 5-5 the rest of the way. Somebody asked me today, What if Cutter goes 8-8? What if he somehow finds a way to win 4 out of 5? And how, with one, the way one win changed the mindset of a lot of fans here, just injected some quick optimism because it was a thorough win. Would 4 out of 5 against this group, like let's say they lose to the Panthers and then win 4 straight and go 8-8. Or actually the way the guy said it to me is, hey, suppose they split these games and win out. I don't know if it saves Cutter. I really don't. That might depend on how strong, frankly, the Cowboys and Ravens are when the Bucs take them on. If both of those teams keep winning and Cutter manages to beat both of them on the road and wins 4 out of 5 here, let's say he beats the Ravens, the Cowboys, and the Falcons and then splits these next two games at home, which would give the Bucs a 5-3 home record, by the way, which would end the Den of Depression nickname on JoeBucksFan.com. The Bucs are 3-2 at home right now. If they split one of these next two and beat Atlanta at home, they would finish 5-3 at home for the first time in many, many, many years that they actually had a winning record at home. They had some 500 records, but it's I don't see it. I just don't see Cutter surviving. There's been too much that's gone wrong. The Glazers would have to put a lot of faith into whoever this next defensive coordinator could be. And what kind of defensive coordinator are you going to get when everybody knows Cutter's on thin ice? The whole thing becomes very sticky. I get that you can pay for whoever. Everybody has a price. But I know there are some Cutter fans out there. Some. I don't know many of them personally. But I don't think there's a path here for Cutter other than winning out. But I guess you could try to wonder at 8-8 what would happen to Dirk Cutter. Obviously, if they go 8-8, Jameis is playing well. One name I threw out on the website, John DeFilippo, the Vikings offensive coordinator. That would be a bold hire by the Glazers, even though he's a guy who's going to be in demand. He represents that new wave of young, high-energy, innovative play callers. Super high-energy guy. Reminds me a lot of PJ Fleck, who was the crazy wide receivers coach here with the Bucs, who then went on to success, head coach at Western Michigan, and now he's with Minnesota. He, of course, was there grooming Carson Wentz, handpicked by Doug Peterson, which says a lot. And he was also handpicked as a youngster to be offensive coordinator of the Browns. That didn't last too long, but they did give him Johnny Manziel in his second year and Josh McCown, so he can't work too many wonders. But he is a guy, I think, who's proven himself up in Minnesota. A guy I respect a lot, Mike Zimmer, could have had a lot of offensive coordinators there, but he chooses DeFilippo, who comes in there with a brand new quarterback, a new system, and you know, hey, they're 6-4-1, and Kirk Cousins has adapted, and he's not the greatest talent in the history of quarterbacks, and he had a great game on Sunday night, got them the win there against Aaron Rodgers. It all comes down with these candidates for me as to what does the staff look like? Who are you bringing in here? Are they good teachers? What's the pedigree of the staff? And that's the kind of stuff you don't know in an interview, what these guys are putting out there. I mean, everybody wants John Harbaugh, or not everybody, but a lot of people would like to see John Harbaugh here. I like him too. And I think he's done a hell of a job this year, especially with a quarterback shift and dealing with some adversity, his team's playing through it. But even if John Harbaugh was willing to come to the Bucs, the team Glazer is the one who gets to hear, hey, Harbaugh, which of your staff is coming with you? Who's actually making the journey? What does the group look like? That's so key. Look at Greg Schiano, came in here with coordinators who didn't go on to be coordinators anywhere else. You know, figurehead guys. And Mike Sullivan just went back to the Giants and that was it. So many of his coaches didn't have that pedigree. What about Dirk Cutter's guys here? Did he hire and did he commit to this season the best possible defensive teachers? No, not at all. He didn't change these guys in the secondary, the John Hokes and the Brett Maxeys. And I don't know. So much comes down to the plan and the coaching staff. So for me, it's hard to even finger one guy over another, but I'm all for the young, energetic play caller, quarterback guru. It's still a quarterback-driven league. It's going to go further in that direction. And look, if DeFilippo seems to be the best guy to work with Jameis, and Jameis is the best quarterback that's going to be available for this team next season, which, you know, if they finish 6-10, that's probably the case, right? They would have maybe number 12 or 13 overall pick and not really be in line for a quarterback. And Jameis will have been up and down again, and it's still a talent that's affordable. Maybe you bring in a quarterback guru and some new energy and a guy with the right defensive plan to be head coach. I don't know. It's difficult stuff, but some of that clarity will come in the coming weeks. And the Bruce Arians thing, I think it's interesting that he keeps doubling down, saying that he wants the Browns job. I bet there's got to be some sort of strategy to that. But at some point, if you keep saying you'll only take one job, eventually you sort of want to look toward another job just for leverage purposes. You don't want to totally pigeonhole yourself with the Browns, because what kind of money can you squeeze out of the Browns if they think this is the only job you'll take? So I suspect Arians is going to continue to float around and somehow expand his desire to coach some other teams, and maybe the Bucks are on that list. I don't know. We don't really know at the end of the day. We know he has a relationship with Jameis. We know he has a relationship with Jason Light, but you really don't know, even if he likes these guys, does he want to work with them? Does he want to get in bed with them? Because you know that Arians' goal, having read some of his book and heard him interviewed in different settings, he would love to get into the Hall of Fame. And he's only going to do that if he can pull out a Super Bowl win as a head coach. I think that would lock him up with some of his coordinator accomplishments and his two-time coach of the year. If he somehow got a Super Bowl with a new team, I think he would be a Hall of Famer, which would put an end to a great story for him. But that's enough for me right now. What the hell? I'm out of here. I appreciate your support on the podcast and of all of our podcasts here at JoeBucksFan.com. Subscribe to them, leave a review. They're on Podbean, iTunes, Google Play, and some other platforms. We're going to keep rolling, taking you through this season, the off season, nonstop. And thanks again to Bill Curry Ford. Go to their website. You're car shopping. You know you are. Just go to Bill Curry Ford, CURRIE.com, BillCurryFord.com, and DGDoors.com for discount garage doors. Thanks a lot, guys.